Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is speech-language pathologist and educator Yvonne Rogalski. Rogalski is a graduate of the University of Florida, where she received her master's in communication sciences and disorders and her doctorate in rehabilitation science. She is currently an assistant professor in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology at Ithaca College. In 2011, she founded the Ithaca Community Aphasia Network, a support group for adults with acquired communication disorders. Welcome to the show, Yvonne.
Thank you, Tish. Thanks for having me.
Now, you told me that you originally planned to go back to school and pursue a degree in English, but you segued into communication sciences and disorders. Tell us why.
I did. Well, when I did go back to school, I was about 28 years old or so. I had to complete an undergraduate degree in the States before I could get a master's degree. So I had a three-year Canadian degree in general arts. And so I actually ended up getting, with some course transfers, an English BA. But then I wanted to go on and go into linguistics or study languages somehow. And I ended up in Dower Hall in the University of Florida, which is the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders, simply because all of the courses that they were offering were really interesting. And so once I went in there, I said, hey, can you tell me about speech-language pathology? And they did, and they told me they really loved their jobs, and I thought, I really want to love my job too, so maybe this is a good fit.
Yeah, it's a really interesting landscape. I mean, there's so much to learn and teach in regard to this.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about aphasia, because that is one of your specialties, and it's something that many people are interested in because it affects so many people. Tell us what it is exactly.
Sure. Aphasia is an acquired language disorder. So it's something after all of your language has been developed and then suddenly it's gone or it's impaired, usually as a result of brain injury, typically a stroke in the left hemisphere. And it can affect any modality of communication. So it can affect verbal expression, comprehension, reading, writing. But the hallmark of aphasia is difficulty accessing words. So it's not as though you've lost the word. People with aphasia can tell you that they know exactly what it is they're trying to say. It's the access to that word or phrase that is impaired.
Yeah, and that's something that the aphasia networks are always telling people to stress, that it doesn't affect intelligence.
Right. So typically it doesn't affect the way you think or feel. Certainly some aspects of cognition can be affected. So for example, attention, right? So if you're talking to someone and you have to try really, really hard to concentrate on finding those words, any attentional disruption is going to make it that much more difficult for you.
Uh-huh. And aphasia disorders usually progress quickly if it happens in certain ways, like strokes. But there are some that progress slowly, like Alzheimer's or dementia. Is that true?
Well, so aphasia is a language disorder. And in dementia and in certain degenerative diseases, you can have difficulty with language as well. But there's a big distinction, and that distinction is how the loss occurs in the first place. So for someone who has a stroke or even a traumatic brain injury, they can have impaired language, and typically there's a recovery period, and they can actually continue to recover beyond that mythical 3 months that
exactly.
Sometimes people talk about.
Everybody I've talked to said that should not be told.
Right, right. It's a myth.
Yeah.
And that people can recover years after they have aphasia. So the course is chronic. It's something that you have, but something that you can get better at. Whereas with dementia or some other degenerative disorders, the course is progressive. So if you have word finding problems, it may not just be simply accessing those words. It might be that the semantic system itself is impaired. So your concept for that word. So there's a large difference.
Yeah, that's really hard to deal with dementia and Alzheimer's, because it almost feels like people's brains are just, you know, going away in some ways.
It is difficult. It's very difficult for family members and for friends. it's important for them to understand that it is something going on with the brain, that this person can't prevent what they're saying now or what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, though, we, of course, take it personally. This is our loved one who has dementia. But yeah. But really, it's, you know, their brain isn't working the way it used to.
I know a lot of people think people are being willful or, you know, just trying to be difficult.
And they're not trying.
tell us some of the therapies that you use for, let's talk about somebody who's had a stroke, mm-hmm. and that you probably can bring back in some ways.
Absolutely.
How do you deal with it?
Well, so it really depends on the type of aphasia, so the type of language disorder the person has, if comprehension's affected more than expression, or if it's simply word access that they have the most difficulty with, maybe it's grammar. The kind of research that I do is at the discourse level, so it's anything beyond the sentence level. So the therapy that I've developed is intended to enhance word finding. But doing it sort of at a more complex level. So it's very simple. We have someone read something aloud, a passage. It could be something they're really, hopefully it's something they're really interested in. And then they summarize what they've just read.
Ah.
There's a memory component involved. They summarize that from memory using certain constraints. And the constraints are that they cannot use a pronoun, because if you think of it, I could say he, she, but you might not know whom I'm referring to, right, unless I provide that reference initially. So people with aphasia who have difficulty with word finding tend to use more of these references. They're easier. They're go-to words. So in this therapy, they're not allowed to use those. They're also not allowed to use non-specific words, such as thing or stuff.
Mm.
And the reason being is that we want to constrain them to only using meaningful language. We want to boost that lexicon or word system. So yep, they just read, they summarize within those constraints and then reread.
How can you tell when somebody's making progress, though? I mean, I hear that this has to do with a lot of repetition,
mm-hmm.
constant repetition, which probably makes some intelligent people really mad.
Right.
But how do you measure progress?
Lots of practice. Usually you should always do some pre-testing, but not just language measures. We need to have quality of life measures. So if we see a client in our clinic, at the beginning, we'll give them some kind of quality of life assessment, or how do you feel that you're performing, or how effectively are you communicating in different situations? How has this aphasia affected your quality of life? Along the way, of course, you can take measurements. You see that they're progressing to, you know, they're getting 90% of the task that you're working on. You can move on to something else. And at the end of therapy for discharge, we give them those tests that we gave them at the very beginning to see that they've made progress. But also, again, to see that hopefully their therapy has increased or enhanced their quality of life. That's a big part.
Yeah, that's a major concern, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense that it would be. Now, are you trying to reawaken memories that have been lost by stroke or brain injury?
No.
Or activate new pathways? I mean, honestly, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I've always been curious about the workings of the brain that way.
So in aphasia, so in this acquired language disorder, the memories are there. We're simply trying to access the words to talk about them.
To express.
Yeah.
Okay, the images. And the...
So after someone has a stroke, if they have aphasia, some people, they can't say anything at all, or they have a terrible time understanding people. Within the first couple of months, there's this regeneration period where your brain is just trying to restore itself.
This is after stroke
or brain
injury? This
is right after stroke, a couple of months where you've got, so your neurons are trying to find those pathways again. Mm-hmm. Now, beyond that, any change that occurs is a result of neuroplasticity. So what that means is that our brains are capable of changing as a result of experience. So that's where therapy is really important. And we're learning now that intensive therapy is really important, and for longer periods of time than most of our clients are typically given. So with intensive therapy, there are a couple things that can happen. So these synapses or these neural pathways, these connections, can either regrow or they can find new ways of activating the same areas. So if you have aphasia, that means your left brain is affected.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in your recovery process, you're probably recruiting a lot of pathways from your right brain. Your right brain's trying to help out, and that's why we have some therapies like melodic intonation therapy, where we try to have people intone their words and phrases, so using that right hemisphere to help with the left. And then if we've also shown, though, that apart from the early stages, the right hemisphere can actually interfere with regaining language in the left. So
really?
So recently we have studies showing that if you impede the right hemisphere using transcranial magnetic stimulation, so if you just kind of shut it off, then the left hemisphere, which is where language is, is working harder to come up with those words, and as a result, you're having more brain-related changes in the left hemisphere, which...
Wow, so you're almost healing, able to heal it better.
Yeah.
If the right isn't interfering. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
This makes me wonder about new roads to creativity that some of these people find when they have aphasia, and then they start getting therapies and moving different parts of the brain that way. That's fascinating. Now, I read about something called progressive jargon aphasia. Do you know anything about that?
Progressive jargon.
It's when patients' speech is incomprehensible to us, but they understand perfectly what they're saying, but they tell you later.
Right, right. And this can happen in people with aphasia, where it happens in folks who have more difficulty comprehending. Okay, so that means their lesions are typically in the temporal lobe, which is if you go in from your ear. In from your temple, that's where that is.
Uh-huh.
They have a difficult time understanding, and then when they produce speech, they're not aware that what they're producing is also incomprehensible.
That's amazing. That seems to be happening in this country all over the place. No, I'm joking about that, but that is a really interesting thing for people to think. That they are sounding perfectly normal.
Right, right. I mean, there are all kinds of impairments that can occur when you have a language disorder. So one of the women in our ICANN, or our aphasia group, it's the Ithaca College...
We're going to talk about that
community aphasia network.
Yeah.
She has more difficulty understanding people when they speak, so more difficulty with auditory comprehension relative to written comprehension. So she can read and understand that way much better than she can listening to someone. So when you communicate with her, it's always good to have pen and paper around so that you can write down key words so that she'll be able to understand.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Yvonne Rogalski. She's a speech-language pathologist. You know what I want to ask you about? Where does stuttering come in with some of these things? You don't know anything about stuttering? I was wondering if it had to do with aphasia aspect or something.
Well, you know, so in speech-language pathology, the field is really so broad. So we have these specialized areas. So there are people who do specialize in fluency disorders. But stuttering can occur for any number of reasons. People who have motor speech disorders, which is completely different from aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
So motor speech means that the execution of the movements for speech are impaired. Okay? So language is fine, memory is fine, intellect is fine, but actually executing that speech. So sometimes people who have stroke do also have a motor speech disorder, where you'll see maybe half of their face, they have some difficulty pronouncing words, fairly consistent difficulty.
Uh-huh.
So stuttering might be something that they do, or they might repeat words or phrases. In aphasia, people can have something called apraxia of speech, which again is different from dysarthria, which is the movement one. So for apraxia, it's actually the planning and programming of those speech movements.
Wow, that's complex, isn't it?
It's complex. And I sort of teach about it in terms of stages, but really it's going all at once, right? So if we want to talk about how you would say a sentence, you need to have the overall plan in your brain. You need to have the attention to execute it. You need to know who your listeners are. You need to maybe be appropriate if you're talking to your doctor or if you're talking to a three-year-old, right? So you're going to have to change the way you speak. So you have all of that going on, and then you need to plan the grammar of the sentence. So that happens as well. You have to find the words, access the words for that sentence. And then you need to plan or program the individual motor movements for your mouth and for your voice box. And then you can execute them. So all of those different stages are different areas that we treat in speech-language pathology.
God, that's amazing, isn't it?
And it happens all at once, so it doesn't really happen
right.
in those stages.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
It's a complex little world in there, isn't it?
So just to much
say
can
a
go
sentence.
Wrong.
Well, let's talk about the Ithaca Community Aphasia Network that you started last mm-hmm. year at Ithaca College. Tell us about it.
Okay. It started as a way to provide support to people with acquired language disorders, just basically a comfortable space where people could speak and be heard. So that's important. Someone who has aphasia, speaking can be difficult. Communicating. Actually, people with aphasia are good communicators. They can get the message across. They can gesture. They can draw. They can use facial expression. But it's the speaking that can tie them up, right? The finding the words. So we wanted a place where people could have that space for expression without anyone having to complete their sentences for them or guess what they have to say. Or sometimes we can be really impatient listeners. And I think that from what I've heard from the members of the group, it's very difficult when they're trying to say something that's very important, but it's just taking longer to say it.
Oh, well, this is an impatient culture. Well, we do, and people speak too fast, too, a lot of the time.
Yeah, and so when we talk about changing the way we communicate based on who we're talking to, when you're talking to someone with aphasia, it's important to be patient, number one, but also it's important to ask them, you know, how do they want you to communicate with them? For some people, it's very frustrating if you do complete their sentences or you act impatient. For others, they might find that it's fine. If you want to help me find this word, then I'm right there with you. And in our group, we it's interesting because we have one gentleman whose comprehension is fine. So he understands absolutely everything that you're saying, but he speaks very slowly, and sometimes he has difficulty actually getting the words out, so he has difficulty with the programming of those speech sounds in addition to word finding. And then we have one woman who has more difficulty understanding, but speaks very fluently. Just as quickly, well, probably more quickly than I do. I don't speak very fast, but speaks, you know, at an average rate.
So do the people in this group, do they have to be at a certain level of having gone through therapy?
It's for everyone.
Aspects of actually recovery, and if you want to put it that way.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And so recovery is lifelong. It's ongoing. And
So once somebody is diagnosed with aphasia, they always will have it, no matter what causes it?
They will probably always have some residual word-finding impairments or difficulty accessing words, but we've seen amazing recovery. We've seen people, who might only be able to say one word, and it could even be a nonsense word, and that's all they can say, progress to saying sentences and having conversations. There's so many factors that can influence recovery. But one thing we do know is that the more intense therapy someone gets, so the more hours per week, for a longer period of time, we are seeing significant changes in those folks. So that's what we've discovered in our research studies. But that's not something that we can do in the real world right now, given our current insurance guidelines.
I was just going to say insurance, and probably the patient's, you know, prerogative. They don't want to spend 12 hours a day in therapy, you know.
And it depends. It depends. So some people are just really motivated, and they, you know, all they want to do is to get better. But you're right. It depends on the individual person as well.
Yeah.
So some people might not want that much therapy. They might not want therapy at all. They might decide that the way that they communicate is fine, and they don't interact with that many people. So
yeah.
every person is different, and as speech language pathologists, we have to respect that and work with that person to find out, well, what do you want to get out of this?
Yeah, and also each injury is probably different too. I mean, different aspects of aphasia affect people all differently, right? I mean,
sure.
It's not just one uniform problem, yeah.
Right, right. So any of
those. So you have to tailor therapy to individuals.
It's always tailored.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I want to ask you, too? I understand that you make your graduate students and stuff come to this aphasia network, these meetings.
I do.
That they'll meet people with aphasia outside of the clinical setting, right?
Absolutely.
In the everyday world. That's great.
Yeah. So some students may have had a person with aphasia as a client. That's very different from just sitting down and having a conversation with someone.
Yeah.
And so I do make my grad students go to either our group, or there's another group in town at Beechtree, which for people, it's a stroke support group, so for people who've had stroke in general. And so I make them go to either our group or the one at Beechtree, and they always give great feedback. They say, wow, you know, I was expecting it to be sad, or I was expecting them not to be able to say as much as they could, or it was a real challenge for me inhibiting and giving the person, and being patient and giving the person space to speak.
No, I think that's great. I think anybody in a setting of trying to help people heal needs to be in the real atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because you can tend to be patronizing or controlling.
And that's something that they learn very quickly.
If you're the doctor or the pathologist. Yeah.
So
that's a great playground, if you will,
right,
for them to learn their skill.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what I want to ask you, too? How has the high-tech computer world changed the way speech pathologists have used therapies and created therapies? Is it entirely different than it was 40 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. There's just so much more you can do. I mean, almost everyone has, you know, a lot of people have a smartphone, or people have iPads or access to computers. So it's changing the way people with aphasia can communicate. And we had a discussion about this in one of our ICANN groups. And one of the women was saying, you know, I can email people. I can stay in touch with family members. And not only is it a way of staying in touch, but it's therapeutic. You know, we can work that into her homework, right? And I know that for someone who has difficulty finding a word, having an iPad there that can have a picture or something where they can more easily access, and having a device that in some cases can speak for them.
But I also assume that the computer world has helped you create programs that people can use.
Yeah, there are all
sorts of... And outside of the therapy environment, right? They can take programs home and
practice. Oh, absolutely. And practice absolutely.
And get well.
Yeah, there
in
are
that
all
way.
Kinds of amazing apps. I heard about some research in Canada, actually, where they have a smartphone, and it can tell where you are, and it can provide all of the important words that you would need to be in that environment. So you're at a particular restaurant. It can then supply all of those words.
Chianti,
so that's
spaghetti.
That's amazing.
And, that's interesting.
And one of the things, one of the women in our group, she's so frustrated with is that, you know, she has a difficult time ordering food because what she wants doesn't always come out of her mouth. And in some restaurants where they don't have things written, it's very difficult for her. you know, if she could just point to a picture, you know, it would be so much easier. Uh-huh. So with an app like that, where, you know, it can supply even the written word for you, is just going to help ease
communication
so much.
So it has opened up worlds. I mean, a lot of us complain about computers. People spend too much time, you know, screwing around on them. And
yeah.
But this has provided a communication network for people who might not have had that 40 years ago. I would assume that it has changed speech therapy a lot, being able to offer those kinds of programs to people. Mm-hmm. I've heard that Ambien has been used sometimes to help people with aphasia. It's something that I've heard that was just short-term. It helped for just a little while, but not for long. Isn't that interesting, though?
It is interesting.
You had not heard that, huh?
It's interesting. No, I've not, but that's not to say that it...
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that comes out in the media. Who knows if it's true or not, because everybody's looking for a miracle.
Yeah, and the thing is that something like that may help, and what we need are the research trials. So it could be that this is just something new. There may be a major trial.
Well, when people get desperate, they'll try anything. We know that as well. Now, I've heard that Ralph Waldo Emerson had aphasia. Had you heard that too? And the Swedish cinematographer Sven Nyquist, who was a cinematographer for Ingmar Bergman, he had to stop his career early because he got aphasia.
Yeah.
So it affects everybody, all walks of life. It's, you never know what's going to happen
with
your brain.
And I think what's so devastating is that for a lot of people, having aphasia has such an impact on who they are now. So a lot of people can't go back to the career they had before. They either find something else, or, you know, if they're retired, they could get involved in something else. But it can affect, you know, your job. It can affect your role in the family.
Yeah.
It can affect who you are as a friend. And so, yeah, all of those aspects are things that we didn't used to think as much about, I think, in our field, but now there's just so much more awareness
of the whole person.
Sure.
The whole life.
Yeah. It's the whole person. It's not just their language that's impacted. It's everything.
Yeah. Well, Yvonne, we are almost out of time. Do you want to give some contact information if anybody wants to get involved with your group or get more information?
Yeah, absolutely. My email address is yrogalski@ithaca.edu. And if you are interested in coming to the aphasia group, or if you know someone with aphasia, please get in contact with me. I'd be happy to talk to you about it. And we'd love to see you.
Great. Well, Yvonne Rogalski, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all this wonderful information. Again, Yvonne Rogalski is a speech-language pathologist and educator and is an assistant professor at Ithaca College. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.